Hello, everyone. My name is John Mercuris, and I'm going to give you a brief explanation of how we designed our DSLs for the Nix browser. I'll explain to you some of our design goals, what we were thinking about matters, and hopefully you can get some tips and you can use these exact same techniques in your own applications to make them more powerful for your users. So, the first things first, what is the Nix browser and who am I? Well, the Nix browser is it's a list-based power browser. We often call it the hacker's browser. It's totally, completely customizable, and it can do anything you want. That's the premise of it. You can tweak it in any way. So the second question is, who am I? Well, my name is John. I'm a computer scientist. I'm a Nix browser developer, obviously. You can see my email here if you want to reach out. Some questions you have, anything, john@atlas.engineer. And you can also check out my website, http://john.mercuris.online. So, before we get into how you can use DSLs in your program to make them better for your users, the question is, well, what is a DSL? So, a DSL, according to Wikipedia, it's an interestingly recursive definition. They say, a domain-specific language is a computer language specialized to a particular application domain. That's kind of wonderful because it's self-referential. It doesn't really say anything. So why is that? Well, that's because actually a DSL is a really ambiguous thing. It's actually any small language that is tailored to a specific purpose. It's a language that is limited in scope. Doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles. Maybe it has a small standard library. Maybe it only has three or four functions exposed. It's incredibly tiny. That's the key of a DSL, to be very tiny to solve a specific problem. DSLs are often employed by end users, or when I say users, I mean engineers, programmers, sometimes even actually non-technical users as well, though. Some people do try to make DSLs simple enough that literally anyone without any formal training in programming language usage, compilers, etc., can use them. So, why do these languages exist? Well, the first one obviously is they're incredibly simple, right? So, that makes them really good for configuration files, things that the user is touching directly. Or things that the user is going to look at, right? They're going to see, okay, we have this specific settings file. Let me tweak some parameters here. Maybe there will be some settings file for a game where they can edit some arguments and change the behavior. Another thing that you may be more familiar with as an engineer is document markup. I'm sure many of you have used Markdown. Or org mode, which is actually what we're looking at right now. So this is a org mode document with its own DSL. And this is extremely useful. And of course, the most famous HTML. So, okay, we know what they do. We know who uses them. Now the question is, why would we use a DSL instead of a general purpose programming language? Why are we kind of restricting ourselves to a DSL? Well, number one, they're incredibly simple. When we make a more complex language, when we expose more complexity, they become harder to learn and harder to use. Because we can design them ourselves for our application, usually we can tailor the syntax and make it very straightforward, specifically for what we're trying to do. Next is a reality is that we don't typically want to ship a complete compiler bundled with our application. This would be pretty dangerous for a lot of reasons. If you can compile arbitrary code within your application, you open up a gigantic attack surface for people to exploit. And additionally, we don't want to embed a compiler within our program because it's a gigantic undertaking. Compilers are very complex things. Compiler tool chains are also very complex, and going from a piece of source to a binary is a really non-trivial thing to do. So we make a DSL. We don't have to make a crazy compiler. We don't have to make, we don't have to add a lexer, tokenizer, make ASTs and do all this crazy stuff. We just look for some key value pairs and bada bing, bada boom, we have ourselves a DSL that's perfectly tailored for our application. Okay, sounds good so far. I can understand why people are doing these things. And this is the product that comes out of it is something exactly like the Python INI files. So it's just a simple, almost key value store where we have some simple string substitution going on. We have maybe some sections. And this is great. For 99% of use cases, this is amazing, right? We've allowed the user, we've exposed a whole bunch of, extra fancy switches to them without having to make a complicated UI. In fact, this also scales infinitely because with a simple text editor, you could search for a particular argument or value rather. You could search for a particular variable and do whatever you need to do. However, if you want to do something a little bit more complex than assignment, that's when things start to get a little bit more tricky. And when you're making the, or rather when you're trying to make the world's most hackable browser, now we start to think, maybe we'd be limiting ourselves a little bit if all we could do was set the values of variables. That might be a little bit tricky. So let's talk about it. What is the radical approach? So we had a couple of constraints that we discussed that were based on the models of typical applications. Now, because we're, in a very atypical application, our constraints are significantly different. So what if we have a compiler, right? What if we have the ability to compile any form within our compiled program? So Nixt could come with a compiler, right? Why not? It's not too hard to do that in Lisp. Okay, fair enough. So the next thing is, well, what if we trusted the user, right? What if we gave them the power, the responsibility to evaluate any arbitrary Lisp? What would that be like? What could they do? And what if we didn't have to invent a new syntax? I mean, lots of people have already spent a lot of time perfecting syntaxes and thinking about it. Why do we have to invent yet another one? Why can't we just reuse the existing work of someone else? Well, maybe we can. So let's kind of go through these points a little bit more in depth. So the first kind of subpoint is about using list syntax. So rather than coming up with a whole new syntax, let's just use list syntax, right? Because list syntax allows you to represent any arbitrary data and any arbitrary program. So we've covered everything that we could possibly want to do, right? If we want to save data technically everything is data or code, we can do that. No problem. We don't have to add anything. And additionally, one of our kind of desires of making a DSL is incredibly simple syntax. And I don't think it gets any simpler than Lisp. So what is really Lisp syntax like? Well, it's just, a bunch of S expressions. And an S expression is just an atom. And then you can think of it as just a form. A form is composed of atoms. Or other S expressions wrapped in parens. So this is kind of another recursive definition, but it's only two rules. And just to clarify something, an atom is, you can think of it, there's a couple of things that can be atoms, but to simplify it for your thoughts, think, okay, we have maybe a string, maybe we have an integer, maybe we have a symbol. These can be atoms, and they can be nested infinitely with expressions. So we have a simple syntax, right? So the next step is a compiler. And I'll kind of explain how this works. And again, the purpose of this presentation is to show you our approach and to help you understand it. I'm simplifying a lot of things, and I'm not necessarily talking with the most correct Lisp terminology for the sake of effective communication. So you can think of it like this. We have a Lisp program running, and then we just take a snapshot of everything, okay? and we save that snapshot. That's what compiling a Lisp program for distribution is. We start with the compiler. We go compile this, compile this, compile this, compile this, compile this. It compiles a whole bunch of things. And then we save the whole world, including the compiler, in a specific file. So now we have a Lisp compiler. This is pretty standard. Okay, there are ways to not have the compiler in the Lisp image. There are ways to remove things. There's tree shakers. We're not going to cover that. But suffice to say for Nixt, we include the compiler in our Lisp image because we get it for free, for no extra effort on our part. So, the final point, and this is the most difficult one to swallow, right? You're trying to make a secure application, or you're trying to make a reliable application, maybe one that's not going to suffer from so many potential exploits, right? You don't want to open up a huge, gigantic surface area. I get it. But in Nixt, we trust user input. It's their computer. They're allowed to do what they want to do with it. If they're going to do all sorts of mistakes, that's fine. Ultimately, we give them the power. Of course, they could choose to do nothing with their user input files and you know, reduce their risk, or they could do whatever they want. They could copy and paste blindly without examining snippets of code from the internet. Nonetheless, let's just consider that for our application, we trust user input, and let's see what happens. You know, what did we gain from all of this? So, every single configuration file in Nixt is literally just Lisp. Everything. And you can embed any arbitrary Lisp code you want in any configuration file. So in the right hand, Emacs window regular person frame, we have an example of a configuration file. So rather than just allowing the user to set arbitrary keys and values, we let the user write literally anything. So here I have a sample where I've defined a command. This is a Lisp expression that we could have also written to Nixt, and now I can run the command hello, and it'll prompt me for something, and it'll print it, right? This wouldn't be possible if it was just an INI file. We can't anticipate all the potential use cases for Nixt. We cannot anticipate how someone is going to need to mold it to their workflow. So every single configuration file is Lisp. And that extends to everything. So I provided here a little sample from our bookmarks. Our bookmarks file is just Lisp again. If you wanted to, you could make a macro that does all sorts of expansion and generates a whole bunch of bookmarks. You could do that. You could have another macro that fetches a whole bunch of URLs from the internet and populates your bookmarks. So let's go a little bit more practical beyond just the initialization file. So the initialization file is an example of someplace. So the initialization file is the init.lisp file here on the right, the user configuration. So the init file is an example of something that typically would have been an INI file. And that's a pretty common use case. People can understand that, right? They have a Emacs init file where they can execute arbitrary Lisp. And that's fine. That's fine. But there are use cases outside of the init file. For example, we have a mode in Nixt called auto mode. And auto mode, it's effectively a predicate that enables and disables different modes for different URLs or hosts or whatever. Because we don't know how the user wants to enable and disable modes, we allow arbitrary Lisp. In this sample that I provided here, we have, you know, tomato, cucumber, salmon. These are exact matches. So when we visit the page cucumber, it's going to enable dark mode, the Wikipedia page on cucumbers. But there are more cases. So a great example of this is actually we had one user who wanted to enable proxy mode for onion addresses, right? Because we didn't limit them, because we didn't say to them, you have to follow this format or whatever. They made their own predicate. They used regex in this case, so match regex. And then they said, then start my proxy. And then they can do all sorts of, you know, things like disabling force HTTPS or whatever. So that's the power of allowing the user to execute arbitrary Lisp in files outside of just the initialization file. So, and I wrote this here to emphasize, the user can write any arbitrary predicate using the complete Lisp language. Amazing. At least I think it's amazing. So, what's the whole point? Number one, we didn't have to write a compiler. We used the compiler SPCL specifically. It's already fast. It's secure. It's efficient. Secondly, or maybe thirdly, our users don't find themselves hitting a dead end with a particular DSL because of something we didn't anticipate. They can use all of Lisp to do whatever they want to do, whenever they want to do, wherever they want to. So, I don't know. I think that's kind of important, personally. When you're trying to make the most hackable browser out there. Anyways, the next thing is, we don't invent a new language that the user has to learn. You know, they may already be familiar with S expressions, another Lisp, Guile scheme, something like that. It's a simple syntax. It's the same thing. It takes minutes to learn, and it's incredibly powerful. And finally, and most importantly, for our context, the users are fully in control of their system. So I hope that, you know, that was useful for you. I hope you kind of understand why we didn't try to reinvent the wheel, why we decided, okay, why make another DSL when we can just use this amazing, wonderful compiler already built into our system. Maybe it makes sense for you too. Maybe you can use a general purpose language as well for your configuration or for your data store or whatever. Because you saw, we're using it also for our bookmarks. We're using it also for our auto mode rules, all sorts of. Actually, even our history is a Lisp file. Anyways, the point is, hopefully that's interesting to you. Hopefully it gives you some ideas. I hope you enjoyed. Thanks for listening. Thank you so much for your attention and for your time. And I will catch you later. Bye-bye.